This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The green energy world was buzzing last week with an announcement many called a game changer. Tesla Motors, known for its sexy, expensive electric cars, said it was getting into the solar battery business. The company wants to create battery systems for homes, businesses, utilities to better store energy from solar panels. This would effectively set aside the long-standing criticism of solar energy that it only works when the sun's out. For this new venture, Tesla is partnering with the country's largest installer of photovoltaic panels, a company called Solar City. And this really got some advocates in New Hampshire excited because Solar City has just announced plans to come to the Granite State. But while sun power supporters are feeling pretty bright about all this news, they have a long way to go before solar is mainstream here in New Hampshire. Solar accounts for less than 0.3% of the state's power supply right now. And at this point anyway, most political and business leaders seem more focused on natural gas pipelines than on photovoltaic panels. Today in The Exchange, yet more hope for a solar surge and whether those hopes will pan out. Let's hear from you, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests for the hour. With us in studio is Clay Mitchell, lecturer who teaches courses in sustainable energy at UNH. He's also a partner at Revolution Energy and has served as president of the New Hampshire Sustainable Energy Association. And Clay, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Sam Evans-Brown, NHPR's environment reporter. And Sam, thanks for helping us out.
Anytime, Laura.
Well, Sam, I did want to start with you. How big an obstacle has the storage issue been for solar energy? There was a lot of excitement about this Tesla announcement.
Yeah, so far, storage has really not been an obstacle at all for solar, because most solar installations in the country have been what's called net metered, which basically means that they're using the grid as their backup for their solar panels. So whenever the sun's not shining, you just pull electricity from the grid. And, you know, there have been a lot of studies as to what percentage of people could do this before it started to become an issue for the grid. And we're nowhere near the numbers that are talked about. Even sort of industry studies say it's about 20% would have to be coming from solar before the grid would have problems serving as a backup for lots of people with solar. And we're just nowhere near those numbers. We're struggling to get to 1% of people having solar on their rooftop. So it really has not been an impediment at all to the growth of solar. The impediment has been other things, mostly like the price of putting it on your roof.
So what do you think some of those problems are, Sam? I mean, I read an article this morning about Hawaii and how 12% of the power there comes from solar, and some of those problems are cropping up.
Right. So when we talk about, it gets into kind of the engineering of the grid. And basically, you know, if you were to have a house that had solar panels on the roof and the clouds were to pass over the sun, and, you know, say you had a whole neighborhood that was in that situation, all of a sudden the grid has to ramp up a bunch of power plants very quickly in order to account for that demand.
It's just so that, like, your lights can stay on and your computers
right,
keep running.
It's just like if you were to have a whole neighborhood come home all at once and everyone switch on all of their appliances all at the same time. The grid would have a really hard time with that as well. And so it's just a matter of the engineering of the grid. Is it designed to respond to very quick fluctuations in power? And you know, how we've done that in the past is you have a power plant that's spinning at a certain speed, and then it spins up to another speed, and it can only do that so quickly. So it's an engineering problem. We have kind of an old world grid right now.
So, Clay, if Tesla creates these amazing batteries and people, you know, install them wherever, in their garages or whatever. Does that solve the problem if people can store solar energy and not have to worry about that grid backup that Sam explained?
It can. It's going to require some pretty intelligent controls on it to make sure that it meets the demand as it peaks. And that's really where you get into the real mechanics of the smart grid. I mean, it's just like the same problem we have today, which I don't hear people talking about. I call the Keurig effect. Everybody does get up in the morning at the same time and turn on a Keurig, and a Keurig draws 1,700 watts for about 10 seconds when it first boosts up, and there are millions of those. So, you know, we're responding to it today, and I think we can respond to it in the future, and I think that this battery storage along with smart grid technology can start to deal with some of those issues.
So what was your reaction, and you're sort of getting there anyway, when Tesla made this big announcement? There was a lot of excitement about this.
It was muted because when I saw that they were going to build that battery plant, that's exactly what I thought they were going to do, and that they were going to be announcing a home battery system. So for me personally, I was not excited to see that. What I was excited was to see the presentation. If you haven't seen the presentation, you should watch the entire thing, because what I was excited about is you're starting to see leadership. And that's what we need.
Well, and Elon Musk, very, I don't know how to put it, Sam. Someone people pay attention to.
Yeah, I actually wrote a story about when Solar City came into the state last week. The way I put it was, he's the closest thing the clean energy industry has to a rock star. I mean, he's very presentation oriented. And when he gave his presentation about the batteries, you know, he says, let's look at what this building is drawing from the grid right now. And he pulls it up. He's like, oh, look, it's zero, because this entire presentation has been powered by these batteries. You know, he's very flashy. And he brings a kind of, and he and his company bring the kind of, cachet that the solar market has been struggling to find.
Kind of like Steve Jobs used to make those Apple presentations. I've heard that analogy before. The number for you to join us here on the exchange as we look once again at solar power and some news surrounding its prospects in this country, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. So, Clay, you know, we've heard talk for a long time about a solar surge. We here in the exchange have done multiple shows on this. What do you think, Clay? I mean, is now the time for solar to really take off, or you're feeling a little less optimistic?
No, I'm feeling optimistic. I think here in New Hampshire, I know one of your callers is probably going to talk about this. I don't want to steal his thunder, but, you know, we've had some problems in New Hampshire in the political level and the policy level to make it happen, but we're not receiving the stable support that we need. It is poised to take off. It is taking off in other places, and the distinction is the mistakes our policymakers are making along the ramp up.
Give us a little bit more on that, because some people won't know what you're talking
about. Okay, so the Renewable Energy Fund is poised to be rated, which is the primary support for almost all of our renewable programs, especially solar. And right now, we are seeing a ramp up in business. There are more and more companies opening. They're hiring. They're putting people on the ground. They're putting projects on the ground. A key component of that is the incentive program supplied by the Renewable Energy Fund. The House budget raids that fund, and it will be a very challenging response for the industry to deal with. Meanwhile, states around us are on a massive uptick of installing solar, doing it in a programmed way, having incentives that are stable and supportive of the industry. And we're countering that. It's incomprehensible.
Massachusetts does a lot.
Yeah.
And Vermont does a lot. And yet, Massachusetts, I saw in that recent PUC report on high energy prices in the Northeast, Massachusetts has even higher energy prices than we do.
I did not see that and compare the energy prices, but I don't think that there's any attribution of that to their solar deployment. There are other factors at play with Massachusetts energy prices.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming the solar subsidies for the high prices. I guess what I'm trying to say is they have all this investment in solar Massachusetts, and it doesn't seem to be helping.
It's going to take a little bit. I mean, Massachusetts' goal is 1.6 gigawatts. You know, we're at 7 or 8 megawatts, which is a fraction of that. It's about 1/200th of what Massachusetts has. I mean, their goal is the same output as Seabrook Nuclear Plant. So they're trying to put a nuclear plant on the ground, on people's roofs, and in fields where it's appropriate.
That's the goal in Massachusetts.
It is.
That's huge.
It
Sam, did you want to jump in, and then we'll go to our callers?
Well, I was just going to say, if you want to look at what is driving energy prices everywhere, you really can't look to solar because it is still such a small, you know, portion of the portfolio. But also on the cost side, the incentives, you know, you're talking about a penny or two per kilowatt hour, or excuse me, not per kilowatt hour, per month on most people's bills. So it's really not a cost driver either way yet. There are people who are worried that if solar starts to really grow, that it could become a major drag, or optimistic that it could become a major, you know, could, because basically what it does is it chops the top off of the demand curve, because, you know, you're reducing the demand from each household. And so that's the most expensive part. That's the most expensive electricity, is the stuff that we call in at the last minute. And so there are a lot of people that are optimistic that when you hit those numbers that Clay was talking about, that it will reduce prices, but down the road is what we're talking about.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Andrew's calling in from Washington. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Laura. Good morning, panel. As you said, I'm from Washington. I'm the chairman of the Energy Committee here. We already have some solar capacity in the town of Washington. And as you mentioned, you know, the Republican House budget included a $52 million raid on the Renewable Energy Fund. And that fund itself leverages private investment in solar panels and other renewables and supports an industry that I think employs up to 20,000 people in New Hampshire. And I was interested to know what the panel thought of the potential short and long-term impacts of this massive, potentially unconstitutional raid on dedicated funds.
Andrew, thank you very much. And Clay, you talked about that, so I'll throw that to you.
Well, I think, in one word, it's devastating. It's unplanned. It converts what is a dedicated fund into what essentially amounts to a tax. Even I'm talking to my 13-year-old son this morning. When I called it a dedicated fund, he said, well, why do they call it a dedicated fund? And I said, well, I'd be happy to trounce you up to the legislature and have you ask that same
question.
There's
a long history of dedicated funds being raided.
Yeah, which is no excuse to keep doing it. I mean, that's just moronic. But the point is that this fund is being raided at the time when the federal tax credit is also scheduled to step down at the end of 2016. And the 1-2 punch of us not having the Renewable Energy Fund and the federal tax credit declining could be a killer.
Just to put things in perspective a little bit, Laura, if you were to look at, say, an $18,000 solar array on someone's roof, you get about a $5,000 federal tax credit. So that's off of your federal taxes when you file them at the end of the year. And then, you know, it's somewhere around $3,500 in a state rebate that just comes to you as a check, basically. So to what degree does that make installing that $18,000 array less attractive? It's about $3,500.
Okay. And Clay, after a break, I'm going to let you talk about why taxpayers should fund these renewable projects. You know, the deal Sam outlined sounds like a great deal for the individual, but is that really the state's responsibility to help people pay for that? I can tell you want to answer that. We'll answer it in just a moment. You can join us too, like Andrew did. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the future of solar power in the Granite State. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour, Sam Evans Brown, NHPR's environment reporter. Clay Mitchell, lecturer who teaches courses in sustainable energy at UNH. He's also served as president of the New Hampshire Sustainable Energy Association. And Clay, to you, just before the break, you and one of our callers were talking about your frustration at the state legislature, quote unquote, raiding the Renewable Energy Fund, which helps folks pay for renewable energy projects, including solar panel installation. I asked you, why should taxpayers fund that? Why shouldn't people just go out and do it on their own if they want to do it?
Well, I think you have to focus on the words. It's an incentive program. And the purpose of an incentive is to change behavior and open people's minds to a new way of doing things. And we've talked so far just about the economic benefits of solar, but it continues to have tremendous environmental benefits. And that doesn't even include the national security benefits of having domestic power source with local jobs. And these kind of programs are set up to decline over time. And I think people forget that. The Renewable Energy Fund should eventually reach zero when we have enough solar on the grid, and the rate of the rebate has gone down considerably over time. So we're headed towards a programmed, planned reduction. But what's happening right now is basically we're jumping off the cliff and we're interfering with a business cycle that's going to cause a lot of problems. And so eventually they shouldn't pay for it. And we're getting there slowly, but we have to get there through stable policies, not this kind of back and forth.
So beyond the individual benefit in terms of saving money on electricity bills, you're talking about the broader societal/environmental benefits.
Right. And that's something that from a policy standpoint, all people should share in.
All right. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Joining us now on the phone is Jim Roach. He's president of the New Hampshire Business and Industry Association. And Jim, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Hi, Laura. Thank you.
Well, what are you hearing from your member businesses, Jim, especially large manufacturers, about these continued among the nation's highest energy prices here in New Hampshire? There's been a lot of focus on this lately.
Well, as you can imagine, it's a huge problem. New England, including New Hampshire, has some of the highest electrical energy rates in the country. In fact, the highest in the contiguous 48 states. And, you know, up to now, we've been concerned about losing manufacturing jobs in terms of expansions in other states. You know, we've seen some that have made the news. Sturm Ruger expanded into North Carolina. Foss Manufacturing expanded into Georgia. And the reason those expansions that don't come here hurt so much is that manufacturing, in large measure, drives New Hampshire's economy. Our fear going forward with high energy costs is that existing manufacturers and other employers are looking at existing jobs and doing the calculation as to whether or not they could be located somewhere else in the country or potentially somewhere else in the world where the cost of energy, among other things, is much lower.
Wow. So you're saying we really need to get a handle on this if we want our economy to be healthy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, without addressing my board considers an energy crisis, electrical energy crisis, the impact on New Hampshire's economy could be felt for decades.
So toward that end, Jim, lots of focus, and I know you know this, on getting more natural gas capacity into the region. How much do you hear business leaders talking about other alternatives, though? Everybody seems to be focused on this pipeline issue. Do you hear business people saying, let's look at some other alternatives, maybe solar, that's what we're talking about today, that might diversify the mix a little bit so we're not so dependent on natural gas?
Yeah, I think most business leaders see a role for renewable energy, including solar energy. As your guests have noted, it's a very small share of the energy mix in New Hampshire and New England. At the moment, it looks like it's poised to grow potentially pretty dramatically, particularly with Tesla's battery storage unit. I suspect a lot of homeowners and potentially commercial businesses think twice about installing solar energy just because of the upfront cost and the fact that, when the sun doesn't shine, you can't access that energy. But if you could store it, that might make the installations much more attractive. So I suspect it's we're poised for good things with regard to solar energy. And we have some companies in New Hampshire. GT Advanced Technologies makes equipment that makes crystals that are used in the solar industry. So we have a direct link. And then obviously there are a lot of other companies that install solar panels and maintain them, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a small but important piece of the overall energy mix, and it looks like it might be poised for growth. For the BIA, for my group, the short-term challenge is how do we lower energy costs now, not 10, 15, 20 years from now, that may be too late.
Right now, you need to get those down. So
right.
Solar's great, but let's get this natural gas pipeline issue up and running? Is that what you're saying, overall?
Our position, as I indicated, is that we believe we're in an energy crisis, and I've stated the ramifications of not addressing this in a hurry. What that means for us is more pipeline capacity, natural gas pipeline capacity into the region and more electrical transmission capacity into the region. We're not backing any specific proposal. We spent a lot of time and energy thwarting legislation that would sidetrack energy infrastructure projects or delay or add to the expense or whatnot. Our position is these companies all these projects should have an equal opportunity to make their case, and the successful ones will help address our energy crisis.
Jim, just before you came on, we had a caller who was pretty upset at the prospect of the state's renewable energy fund being raided for other purposes. You know, people who support this say, look, this is a high-tech growing industry, like you said, so let's support it. But on the other hand, there are huge budgetary needs. That's what we hear every time one of these funds are tapped. I just wonder what you think about that in general.
Well, we have a longstanding position in opposition to raiding dedicated funds. Unfortunately, the legislature has done that several times over the last few years. We're well aware of what the House budget did to the Renewable Energy Fund, and we'll be testifying tomorrow at the Senate Finance Committee opposing that move.
Are there major businesses that you are aware of, Jim, that are looking at getting into solar, maybe putting those rooftop panels on the top of their plants to try to lower the prices, or are they still looking at this largely as kind of a niche foray?
I'm not an expert. I suspect there are some of my members that already have rooftop or solar installations. I suspect others are looking at them. You know, most businesses are well aware of the cost of energy, and they've done everything they can to improve the efficiency of motors and lighting and the building envelope and everything else. So I'm sure solar is one of the considerations for businesses, not just in my membership, but throughout the state.
Okay, Jim, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Jim Roach, president of the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We're taking your questions and comments about the development of solar energy here in New Hampshire. 1-800-892-6477. And Sam, go ahead, your thoughts.
I just want to say, the state, certainly there has been a lot of talk about electrical transmission projects and natural gas pipeline. But that's not to say that the state is not looking at alternatives. They are currently working on sort of a straw man proposal for a program that would really beef up their energy efficiency incentives in terms of sort of setting goals for the utilities that administer those programs and saying, okay, you shouldn't just be doling out money to do energy efficiency work. You should be trying to get, you know, X percentage of decreased demand. And they're sort of working with the utilities as to what that program will look like. But, Bob Scott, one of the public utilities commissioners who went down to talk to the other New England governors about that proposal last week or 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure, he did highlight that efficiency effort. So it's not all just about solar or natural gas. There are people working on a lot of different fronts on energy.
So we can, what is it? We can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yes, exactly.
I think is the saying. Although I wonder what you think, Clay Mitchell. There does seem to be so much focus right now among many of our state's leaders on this natural gas pipeline issue. Does that attention divert from what you see as an exciting new field of solar energy?
I think that there's a little too much attention on it. I think that what we need to be looking at is a long-term comprehensive solution. And, you know, that sounds like a bunch of, you know, vague words. But this problem we've had in the past is because we've focused on individual responses rather than a comprehensive solution that solves a comprehensive list of problems.
Yeah. So why is it then? People do say, look, we need to power our economy right now. And we heard from Jim, and I'm sure we'd hear from a lot of people who say, look, we need the energy now. Yes, solar is great. Down the line, great. What does it take to get from A to Z there? I mean, right now you told me before the show that solar makes up less than 0.3% of our energy supply. When you hear that, you think, all right, should we really bother?
I really think, and I've been saying this over and over again, and I feel bad about saying it again, but I think we need leadership. I think this needs to become a bipartisan issue, and that's hard right now. You know, politics is bad, right? People want to come up with reasons, you know, their own issue that's better than somebody else. And instead of coming together and trying to find a solution that works for everybody, people try and draw the lines and use hyperbole and hypocrisy to distract us from the potential of working together to get a good solution.
Sam, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. So I think when we talk about solar, and you know, we've expended so much breath talking about solar over the years. I think the big question is scale, right? At what point does solar start to hit the scale that it really matters? Right now, obviously, in terms of energy prices and our energy mix, solar is just minute. But the question is, when can we start hitting the scales that really matter? Studies have found that it would take about 1% of the state's area to totally power it on solar. So to put that in perspective, that's about the size of Lake Winnipesaukee. In terms of the number of rooftops we have, it would take, if you were to cover every rooftop that had good solar exposure with panels, that would bring us up to about 21% of what the state uses. Now, the question is, like, what does it take for solar to start to get to that scale? Utilities over a long time have always been saying that it doesn't grow quickly enough. You can put up one power plant and it's 450 megawatts and, it would take hundreds and thousands of solar installations to get there. The alternative viewpoint, which I think when we talk about the growth that solar is perhaps poised to see, is that you have hundreds of thousands, millions of consumers in New Hampshire. If all of them are making decisions to buy solar and put it somewhere, that does start to scale very, very quickly. The question is, at what point does the market get to the point where you see your neighbor put solar panels up and you think, oh man, maybe I need to get there too? And when do we hit that tipping point? I think that's the big question mark that we don't really know the answer to.
Right, because as I said, we've been talking about this for a long time, and Sam, you and I have talked about this many, many times, and yet we're still at this teeny, teeny percentage, and I just wonder what it's going to take.
Well, there are states, right? You look at Hawaii. Hawaii is the perfect example. They've got lots of sun. What's the other thing they have? They have high energy prices. We have less sun, but we have high energy prices. So it's just the question of when, that equation starts to look good enough to enough people that they start to put it on their roof. You could see 12% solar in New Hampshire. It might not be that far out. Because if we take Hawaii as our case study, it happens very quickly when it starts to happen.
Yeah, real interesting article again recently in the New York Times about Hawaii's 12% from solar. And for people who might be listening, Clay, and say, well, Hawaii, fine for them. It's sunny and tropical. That's not New Hampshire. You might offer up Germany.
Germany, yes, which has as much sun as Alaska, which has almost, I think, reached 100% solar on certain days when they're producing. And so that's kind of a red herring, the issue of the amount of sun, because we get a reasonable amount of sun. We have a difference. In the winter, it's cold. I don't need to get into the science of that. But a panel is almost twice as efficient in the cold weather as it is in the hot weather. And so even though we get less sun when we have a solar array in the winter, we're outputting much more power than we are during the summer.
All right. Well, gentlemen, again, I want to talk to you about the Solar City headline, because I've got a couple emails all asking about Solar City and the impact of that announcement on us here in the Granite State. I want to remind everybody, too, that you can call us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. So, Sam, before we go to these emails, just please briefly explain to us why people were so excited, some people, not everybody, about this Solar City announcement that they're coming to the Granite State.
So the big difference between Solar City and your typical solar, your local solar installer, is that they're very big and very well capitalized. So there's two ways in which that plays out. One is they've built their business model on third-party ownership. Basically, they're not selling you solar panels. They're selling you the power that comes from solar panels that they own on your roof. What makes that tricky is, obviously, if you're going to own hundreds of thousands of solar arrays all over the country, it takes a lot of money. And so they're sort of bundling the ownership and selling. Clay actually probably knows this better than I do, but they're selling it these sort of financial mechanisms to investors on Wall Street, including the federal tax incentives. They're sort of bundling those up to companies that have big tax liabilities. So their innovation was really a financial one, them coming to the state means that they can offer you solar panels on your roof for no money down. Depending, if you have good solar exposure, they basically come to you and they say you've got great exposure on your rooftop. We'll put panels on. You won't have to pay anything, and we'll cut 10% to 20% off your electric bill, which looks great to a lot of people.
Like, sure. So I make out, and I make out because my energy bills are lower. They make out because they're selling that power to the grid. Is that what they do, Sam?
They sell. There are a couple of mechanisms that they use, but often they're selling the power to you. So and you're buying it at a price that's slightly lower than what you're than what you were paying your utility company before.
And I'm not spewing out fossil fuels as
right.
much.
Well, again, it's complicated, but yes, sort of ostensibly on paper, you're buying 100%. You're using 100% solar power, and you know, so that's their big innovation, is no money down, solar on your rooftop. And in other markets, you've seen them get a lot of people who are not, you know, the sort of typical solar consumer, the people who are buying them for ideological reasons.
Yeah, and go ahead, jump in, Clay, and then I want to share these emails with you.
So we've been – Revolution has been doing this since 2008 in New Hampshire, and it's not really new. It's just we never did it at the residential scale, and we're a smaller company, and so we weren't as well capitalized. Shame on us. Turns out you need $1 billion to be a rock star. but for instance, we've been doing it so long that some of our first contracts are ready to be turned over to the owners. And so in a few years, we'll be able to turn over our first set of arrays, and then the owners will be getting free energy from the array.
And some of the companies that, and again, I mentioned that you are at UNH and the Sustainable Energy Association, but also a partner with Revolution Energy. And so you guys work with what, school districts, towns? Is that more?
More, yes. And we also worked with Favorite Foods, an independent restaurant food supplier, great companies, done a lot of efficiency work. Revision is doing the same work now, and they've been doing it for a while. So it's just it's about the size of the company coming in and doing it on a residential scale in a more deployed way. And I think that's a big step.
Well, so here's an email from Ruth in Canterbury. She says, when I learned SolarCity was coming to New Hampshire, I initially had mixed feelings, as I am a supporter of small local businesses. Our installer, Revision Energy, has been fabulous to work with, very community-minded, providing financial donations to nonprofits that we work for and care about. However, she says, Revision and other small solar businesses seem to be busier than they can keep up with. If SolarCity can help meet the demand and provide a service to more businesses and residents to increase the amount of solar energy that is captured and used in New Hampshire, I'm all for it. I believe this can happen without destroying small local businesses. Ruth says, on this sunny day, let's all celebrate the potential for reducing fossil fuel use and helping the planet. Ruth, thanks for the email. Sam, I wonder, did you hear any grumbling from some of the smaller solar providers on this?
Yeah, certainly. I'd say that you know, when you turn on the microphone, they're all very optimistic that they'll be able to compete. I had a couple of on-background conversations in which it was clear that there are some people who are a little more concerned that you might see some smaller installers sort of pushed out of the market as SolarCity comes in. I think it remains to be seen, though, because there is this question. I mean, what percentage of the market are those installers hitting right now? A tiny, tiny percent. So if it is indeed a limited pie and they're all just fighting over how big of a piece of that tiny share of the market they can get, you will see some go out of the market. Or does SolarCity coming in mean that more people will be going solar, that the pie does indeed grow, and that, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats?
The neighborhood effect that you talked about. Oh, my neighbor did it. Yeah, talk to him or her about it. How's it going?
And then right, and that is a documented effect, and it makes sense, right? I mean, if you're looking to install a boiler and you don't know anything about boilers, what do? You talk to your neighbors, find out what's going on in their basement. And same thing with solar. Once it becomes familiar, it's much, you know, the hurdle becomes lower.
Well, and it's more obvious than a new boiler. And a little bit, you know, more exciting.
Flashier.
Just a little flashy.
Yeah.
That's the word I'm looking for. All right. I've got a couple more emails I want to share with both of you. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We're taking your questions and comments about solar power here in the Granite State. 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, is New Hampshire ready for an aging population? Why many say it is not? We'll find out more. That's tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, solar energy. We've been talking about how some advocates are feeling pretty sunny these days with some new developments in terms of solar storage and a new company coming into the state. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Clay Mitchell, Sam Evans Brown, here's an email from Rob who says, I've always been willing to get on board with solar as soon as it becomes a net, all capital letters, net financial benefit to do so. SolarCity's lease arrangement sounds great, but if it costs me more per month to lease the equipment than I will save on my electric bill, then it is still not a net positive. Avoiding the high upfront cost is great, but it's only part of the equation. Are we there yet? Rob, good question. Thank you. Sam, can you jump in on that, or Clay?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say we've actually been there for years since the state incentive program was set up. It has, if you are staying in your house for a long period, you know, 10 years or more, you will see a net financial benefit. It's just the question has always been, are you going to stick around in one place with a solar array for long enough for it to pay off? And that has been, for the people who have capital, you know, the tricky thing. And then the rest of the problem is that a lot of people just don't have the capital or really the awareness that it does pay off in that 10-year period.
Do you want to jump in, too, on Rob's email? Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, I would say that we've also been there for years. And one of the things that we're seeing in other states to supplement what Sam has said is that in California, where the industry is so much more robust, they've done study after study. And when you sell a house with a solar array, there's an increased value there. So even if you're before the end of your financing period, you can recapture the value of that refinancing on the sale because your house will be seen as more valuable because your electric rate is going to be that much more lower. If you're going to buy one house that has $150 a month in electric and another one that has 20, you're going to assign a value to that differential, and that can be potential recapture even if you haven't run through your financing.
But it's
already net positive.
So even for people who say, well, why should I spend all this money on a solar panel? You know, I might be moving in 10 or 15 years.
It makes sense.
Still makes sense. More than granite countertops and fixing your bathroom?
Yeah, I just saw an article recently that said that you're supposed to pull granite countertops out if you're trying to sell your house because those are getting old-fashioned now.
Well, we won't get into that right now. Let's go back to our listeners. Mary's calling in from Charlestown. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a thought about broadening the spectrum of people who could afford solar energy by using the college loan system, where people would have a government loan to do the installation and then pay back over a period of time, and thus allowing more people to put in solar energy on their homes. And just listening to the discussion now, I think, well, how would we manage the people not staying in their home? I don't know how that would happen, but it just occurred to me as a possibility.
Sure. So sort of a special financing mechanism. Do you know anything about that, Clay? Do people do that right now? I mean, the upfront all at once is a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of different loan programs out there, and they're a little expensive, but they're starting to decline as more and more banks are realizing this is a safe investment. You know, like I think on one of the – right before the show, somebody said, we like our banks to be boring, and investing in solar is a boring, safe investment. And so the more banks that get online, the more financial vehicles are going to become available.
Well, and then there's the Solar City option, Sam, where people like Mary don't have to spend, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 up front.
Right, and not just Solar City, but there are even local installers who are offering loan programs where they, you know, you'll hear them say that you can get into ownership for no money down, where you're just paying off a loan as opposed to paying a lease. Again, the question is, are you staying in one place for long enough? There is a program that the state has passed as state law, as it's sort of an enabling statute that towns can then pass. And I'm not 100% sure how much this has been used for solar, but it's called the PACE program, where basically the any investment you make can be assigned, to as sort of a lien on the property, and then it would go with the house as it's sold. Not many towns have signed up for that, but that is a solution that people have talked about for clean energy finance.
Let's take another call. This is Ann in Mason. Hi, Ann. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Thank you. I'm just calling to say that I'm so happy to hear that so much is going on with the solar right now. I've been off the grid using solar power since 1985.
Wow.
I'm just waiting for people to catch up.
You're ahead of the curve there, Anne.
So I thought that a long time ago when the Jimmy Carter was in office, we were supposed to be having some kind of a solar power renewable energy movement, and so jumped on at that point, and still waiting. But I do know that I travel out to the middle and western part of Massachusetts, and there's a huge movement already established out there. A lot of people with panels all over the place, businesses and private homes. So it's just a matter of people's awareness being raised, and once they realize how easy it is, it'll be just like anything else. It's not going to be any different. It's just, you know, you get your electricity and it's the same. And you don't run out of power during the snowstorms or the bad weather that knocks out the grid.
Right, and during that Thanksgiving power outage, probably people were flocking to Ann's house because they didn't need to worry about that. What do you think of this call, Sam? There's so many interesting things that she raises.
Yeah, there's just one quick point I wanted to make is that, you know, in New Hampshire, we're below 10 megawatts for the amount of solar installations that we have in the state. If you look at Massachusetts, I the last time I checked, and Clay might know this number a little better than I do, but they were somewhere around 250, like closing in on 300 megawatts.
550.
Oh, excuse me. See, I haven't looked in quite a while. So obviously, you know, down south of the border, things are going much more quickly than they are here. They have slightly more generous incentives and sort of a stated policy goal of how many megawatts they're trying to get to. And it's booming down south of there.
Well, and her point, too, about how she's been doing this since 1985, you know, after Jimmy Carter, everybody thought, or she thought, that more people would be jumping onto this, Clay. This kind of gets back to what I asked you guys in the beginning. We have been talking about this for a while. And yet here we are. It's still so small.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, one of the things I use with my students in my classes, I show them the Daily Show snippet on all the presidents in the past who have talked about getting off foreign oil and getting on domestic renewable energy. And it dates back to Nixon. Every single president since then has said the same thing. And it's the same thing I say over and over again. It's a lack of leadership.
Well, what does it say about the viability of solar, though? I mean, is there something inherently not workable for solar that makes it so small, even though we have been talking about it forever, as Ann says?
I think there's some mythologies involved. We talked a little bit about that with the amount of sun and everything and that whether it works and the length of the systems. But what you're seeing, since we did our first array, the price of solar has come down 60%.
60%? Because that's always been the other knock.
What other energy source has declined 60%? And it's going to continue declining. And that's the beauty of our renewable energy fund, is that it declines the rebates as the price goes down. It's a self-executing fund that will eventually go out of need, and that's where we need to go.
Gentlemen, joining us now on the phone is Phil Koop. He's managing partner of Revision Energy, a renewable energy contracting company based in Portland, Maine. And Phil, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Laura.
Just remind us, Phil, what kind of solar work your company does, you know, installing, financing, advising. What kind of work do you guys do?
Yes, we're a solar energy design and installation company. We also do service. We have a facility in Exeter, New Hampshire. We just opened this week in Concord, New Hampshire. And then we have two other facilities over in Portland, Maine and Liberty, Maine.
So are you the guys I would call if I wanted to have a panel installed on my roof?
We would love it if you called.
Just talking theoretically here. But I do wonder then, given what you do, Phil, how you felt about the arrival of Solar City, what that means for businesses like yours. They don't, you know, they don't sell it to you. They lease it.
Yes, Solar City has an entirely different business model. They are a leasing company exclusively. That means that the end user or the client does not have any ownership over the system. They're basically renting the panels and the electricity production from Solar City. We think that using a smaller local company like Revision Energy has significant advantages. We promote ownership of these systems so that the consumer can get the maximum economic and environmental value out of their investment. We do have zero down loan programs so that people who can't afford the upfront cost for a solar energy system can still access the technology by using some decent loan products that we offer.
So we talked a minute ago about the financing. The appeal of the Solar City approach is that, you know, in our culture today, it's no longer the norm for somebody to buy a house in their 20s and then live there forever. So I just wonder what you think about that, Phil, if this might be a better way to go for a lot of folks, where you get the benefit of the panel, but you don't have to buy it, you don't have to maintain it.
Yeah, well, a lease can be an entanglement at the end of an ownership period for a house as well. So, you know, I'm not sure how they get over that hurdle at when they have a leased system and then they decide to change their residence. However, as I think Sam was noting earlier, there are lots of studies that show even in the sale of a home that the solar investor still gets a great return on their investment, whether or not they stay in the house for a long period or not. These solar panels come with a 25-year warranty and an expected useful lifespan of 35 to 40 years. So There's a lot of durability with the system. So whether or not you use the array yourself for 3 or 4 decades, there's still value that can be sold to the next homeowner. And study after study shows that you do get that money back. Another good thing to keep in mind on the investment front is that the annual return on investment from a solar project is typically around 7 or 8% in the state of New Hampshire, and that blows away the return on investment that you would get from, say, a bank CD. And it even a solar array even tends to outperform the market.
When you say return on investment, do you mean the added profit that I might make when I sell my house, or what do you mean?
Yeah, either that or the monthly return on investment from taking, you know, free sunshine from the sky, converting it into a valuable commodity in the form of a kilowatt hour.
Well, earlier, and you probably heard Clay Mitchell talking about his frustration that the Renewable Energy Fund that the state of New Hampshire has to help folks fund these projects has been raided. It's a long tradition in New Hampshire. These specially designed funds are often raided. How do you feel about, though, the critique, Phil, that, look, if solar's so great, it shouldn't need a renewable energy fund. It should stand on its own.
Yeah, well, the first thing I would point out is that fossil fuels have benefited from tremendous government subsidies for the last 150 years, and those government subsidies for fossil fuels continue to this day. And so, sure, we don't mind the idea of removing solar subsidies over time as long as the playing field is level with fossil fuels. And you got to remember, too, that with fossil fuels, you have this tremendous downside attribute, which is when you combust fossil fuels, you fill our closed atmosphere with carbon pollution, whereas with renewable energy, you don't have that humongous environmental impact.
All right.
So we think that there's a lot of good reason to support rapid deployment of clean energy today. Right now we have 7 billion people living on the planet, all burning stuff to drive their energy, and we're on our way to 9 billion people. And since the Earth's atmosphere is closed, we got to figure out how we're going to handle all of that carbon pollution. Well, one immediate way to address that problem is to deploy clean energy, clean renewable energy systems that don't cause carbon pollution.
Phil, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's Phil Coop, managing partner of Revision Energy, a renewable energy contracting company in Portland, Maine. And Sam and Clay, I'd love to go to a few more callers before we close out our conversation today. Let's take Jim in Alton. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. I'm solar illiterate, so I need to know what benefit is there to solar panels on my roof if there's snow on my roof for 4 months out of every year.
Yeah, 4 months this year if you're lucky, right?
I know. I mean, what benefit do I get out of it?
Okay.
How does that work? I don't know anything about it.
Well, I really appreciate the call, Sam, because a lot of folks are probably feeling like, Jim, you know, I'm interested, but I'm, as he put it, I love the way he put it, solar illiterate.
Well, so just a real quick primer here. The sun still does penetrate through the snow. The solar panels then heat up and tend to melt snow. So there's
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and there's a period in which after a snowstorm in which they will stay covered with snow, but eventually they heat up. It tends to sort of slough off. If you want to speed that up, you can, of course, get sort of a roof rake and or one of those like squeegee type things, sort of squeegee it off. But they will shed snow. Even if you've got a shingle roof, the snow will sort of slide off and tend to pile at the bottom of the panel. But eventually they do clear off even when they get snowed on.
So does that save me from roof raking next winter?
That's
a reason
right
there.
It's sort of a roof-by-roof answer to that question. But, yeah, I mean, they will eventually clear the snow themselves.
You know, I love that you called, Jim, with that question because we haven't really, Clay, talked a lot about just common misunderstandings, things that, you know, people don't know about solar. I mean, for example, what Sam just told me, I've probably done 20 shows on solar power, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think that's a problem, obviously. You know, this whole issue about, you know, that it's causing disruptions in the grid. Yeah, that could be something we can plan for, but we're not even there yet. Like I've done the Keurig example. I have a whole calculation of the estimated number of Keurigs in the state of New Hampshire, and it dwarfs the amount of solar we'll ever have in this state. And that's the impact we need to be worried about if we're worrying about that. And the other thing
Keurigs are the little coffee machines,
yeah, those
by
coffee
the way,
machines that heat up. You turn it on, you hear all that noise. That's pure heat, electric heat. That's a massive amount of power being drawn across the grid, and everybody in your neighborhood gets up about the same time. So that's a huge issue. I'm being facetious. In comparison to solar, it dwarfs that issue. On the other hand, this issue about snow and the issue about being cold, they don't understand that panels are more efficient when it's cold. So, you know, a lot of these things need to kind of just go away.
All right. Let's take one more if we could. Jonathan's in Manchester. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
Economic realities have been one of the things that has always been talked about when it's talked against, when the argument is brought up against the renewables. And either say, oh, and also just the economic realities is to follow the money. It's become, unfortunately, a partisan issue. One party has stood firmly against it while maintaining subsidies for oil and for gas. And we should really eventually address it and show where the people in the state Congress are getting the money.
So, because yeah, and Jonathan, I'm sorry.
They want to raise funds, but they don't want to replace the money with anything. And they take money from, you know, it's been a problem in this state, and it's coming from outside.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, and I'm sorry to cut you off there. This has become a political issue. He's right, Clay. You talked about that earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sad.
All right. We'll end it at that. I want to thank both of you very much for coming in, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this issue again. Clay Mitchell, good to see you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Clay Mitchell, lecturer who teaches courses in sustainable energy at UNH, a partner at Revolution Energy, and a president of the New Hampshire Sustainable Energy Association. Sam Evans-Brown, thank you for helping us out. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Sam Evans-Brown, NHPR's environment reporter. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Dylan Morrill. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.